girls do. I look to a woman's love to help me get through. I never needed any more than a feminine touch. I hated the thought of kissing a man, it really was too much. I did not drink, I did not smoke, I did not say goddamn. I was polite, I was sensitive before I loved a man. My family, they were proud of me, proud of what I am. But then along came Lester and my terrible began. I spent my last $10 on birth control and beer. My life was so much simpler when I was sober and queer. But the love of a strong, hairy man stirred my head, I fear, and made me spend my last $10 on birth control and beer.
You're listening to Queer Voices on KPFT, and this segment is called Queer Music Heritage. I'm J.D. Doyle, and tonight I'm bringing you a very special interview with one of our lesbian music legends. Her name is Gretchen Phillips. This artist has been so prolific, and with music touching so many genres, that if you were driving down the queer music highway, it would say, Gretchen Phillips, next five exits. In the mid-80s, she had the distinction of forming two groundbreaking bands at the same time. The groups were Two Nice Girls and Girls in the Nose. And while they were not the first all-lesbian bands, in my opinion, they were the first to put a lesbian point of view front and center in their music, and to take that music into the mainstream. You're listening to the biggest hit of Two Nice Girls, with the delightfully infectious title of I Spent My Last $10 on Birth Control and Beer. But that's not their recording in the background. The song's been covered a number of times by artists as far away as Australia, and the one I'm sharing with you is by an Arizona duo with the very fun name Women in Comfortable Shoes. You'll hear the Two Nice Girls version later in the show. But let's back up a bit. Gretchen's a Texas native and in 1981 moved from Houston to Austin and immediately fell in with the Austin punk music scene, forming the mixed band Meat Joy, whose music did its part to get lesbian rock to the public. After that band broke up in 1985, Gretchen formed Two Nice Girls and Girls in the Nose. In 1991, Two Nice Girls won one of the first GLAAD Media Awards for positive portrayals of homosexuality in music. And in 2001, Gretchen was inducted into the Austin Chronicle's Austin Music Awards Hall of Fame, becoming the first openly lesbian performer to achieve that honor. And the music of these early bands has been credited with being influential to the Riot Grrrl music scene and acts like La Tigra and the Butchies. The group Two Nice Girls split up around 1992, which gave Gretchen an opportunity to pursue solo work in a variety of genres, and also to record with others under such group names as The Gretchen Phillips Experience, Lord Douglas Phillips, and Phillips and Driver. Before we get started with the interview, I want to mention that there are actually two versions of this show. The radio version has the constraints of time limits and also FCC regulations regarding some of the music. And also, well, Gretchen gave me many more terrific answers that can fit into an hour show, so having an internet version allows me to include much more of the very interesting interview. If you visit my site while you're listening, you can follow along with the playlist and see photos of the recordings and artists you work with. That's at www.queermusicheritage.com. On to the Gretchen Phillips interview. How did you get started playing in bands?
Well, my first band was at the Renaissance Festival, the Texas Renaissance Festival. So I got started playing when I was 12. And I just always wanted to be in bands. And I really dreamt of being in bands. And since that first one was an all-girl band, and then my second one in high school was as well, it just kind of came out of a sense of what... just something I've always wanted to do.
Where did you go to high school?
I went to high school at High School for Performing and Visual Arts here in Houston.
Tell me about your high school band.
My high school band was Sarah Hickman, who has gone on to do a lot of music. Julie Prejean, who's also doing a lot of music. And Julie Robbins, now Julie Campbell. And I don't think she's gone on to do a whole bunch of music. I was the lesbian of the high school band.
And then from high school, you moved to Austin.
high school?
I did. I moved right immediately after graduating from high school. I moved to Austin to be in bands.
How quickly after you moved to Austin did you get in a band?
6 months. Yeah, I started jamming with different people. I guess what happens is I got an electric guitar 6 months afterwards. And then, so really it was more, and I jammed with some people maybe about a year. In a little over a year was when Meet Joy was formed after I had moved to Austin.
Was Meet Joy already a group?
No. We formed. There were some, I had been playing with some girls. Teresa was my girlfriend. She was on drums. Melissa on bass. And she had already been in a bunch of bands and was, you know, really one of our heroes. And Skeeter, now going by the name Edith Frost. And we were a girl band, and then we hooked up with this boy band.
Tell me about the song, My Heart Crawls Off.
Well, Sarah Hickman and I, when we were in high school, we were listening to different pop things, Partridge Family. We didn't necessarily like it, but we were listening to it. And one day we decided to write a song as cliche-ridden as possible. So then somehow we did that all through high school, My Heart Crawls Off, with our band, the folk group. And then when I was in Meet Joy, we did a lot of acoustic stuff as well. And so we would be rocking on the electric and making a bunch of noise, and then I'd pick up the acoustic, and then we would go out to the front of the club and perform some stuff there, and the whole audience would have to follow us to the front of the club if they wanted to hear it. And that was a big sing-along.
I just called the operator. She said that your phone was busy. Well, so I started crying, but it stopped. It just made me dizzy. Yes, I know that you're talking to her.
Tell me about the album cover for Meet Joy.
Well, there is no single album cover for Meet Joy. We couldn't decide on an album cover at all. it was really a collective that had a lot of difficulty, you know, deciding things. Like everybody had their, you know, 3 minutes to put whatever they wanted to on it. It was all about major democracy. So because we kind of came from a group called Iconoclast, where we had been working on a variety of creative endeavors, we had the community decorate covers. We hand decorated over 1,500. I have a little collection myself, and they're fantastic because they're this wonderful document of all, you know, different friends doing stuff.
So after Meet Joy, how did you get to Girls in the Nose and Two Nice Girls?
Well, let's see, Meet Joy broke up in March of 1985. I'd been playing music with Kay Turner of Girls in the Nose for a number of years, but in that summer of 85, we had another woman with a big nose, Betsy Peterson, join us on guitar, and stuff really started to come together, and we started writing more songs besides just doing our Motown and easy listening covers, which had occupied us for the 3 years prior. And then that was this one thing that was working. I think we played at a going away slash birthday party. As a matter of fact, I know we did. And to you know, a lot of enthusiasm. And that's all I need. Enthusiastic response, and I'm just going to keep riding the horse in that direction. And then, let's see, Two Nice Girls. Oh, Lori Freelove was a friend of my girlfriend at the time. And so we played some music, and we went to a... We hung out a lot, and we went to a party, and Kathy Korniloff was at this party, and at the party there were a lot of guitars, and we were jamming, and Korn kept following us from room to room, and we just kind of courted her. She was a little difficult to court, but she played very hard to get. But after a few times, she came over. And Lori and I were already calling ourselves Two Nice Girls. And I believe we'd actually even done a show as Two Nice Girls at a Chicago women's coffee house. But when Korn joined us for rehearsal one day, oh, all of a sudden it went to a whole other place. So we started, came up with our set and started gigging and did very well very quickly. And Girls in the Nose didn't do quite as well quite as quickly. So whoever was doing better was whoever I spent the most attention on. But I kind of divided my time evenly between those two bands for about 2 or 3 years.
You had two going at the same time?
Oh, yeah. Because Girls in the Nose was rockin'. We had drummer and bass, and we really were more rockin'. And then Two Nice Girls at that time was very acoustic and very folky. And I just, having two different bands was allowing me to really get my needs met. Because I had wanted after Meat Joy to get quieter again, like I had when I was in high school and had been doing more folk stuff. And, where it wasn't difficult to hear the lyrics. The lyrics, you know, could be message driven, and it didn't require that you having to go through all of the noise. But with Girls in the Nose, I wasn't even the front person. Kay Turner is a, you know, very great front person and very captivating, especially after she started really worshiping Madonna. That just set her stage show off to a whole other place.
How did Girls in the Nose get their name?
Well, Kay has a big nose, and she'd been talking to Betsy, her coworker, who has a big nose, and they were talking about people telling them at some point in their life, you would be really pretty if you'd get a nose job. And I had been teased for my nose when I went to Hamilton Junior High. I can't remember his name. I blocked it out, but I hate him. And Betsy and Kay had said, look, if we ever have a band, we should call it Girls in the Nose. And I heard this anecdote and insisted that that must occur, that the band must be called Girls in the Nose. In order to, Women Unite, take back the nose, in order to reclaim nose pride, the big nose.
And Two Nice Girls put out the first album.
Yes, you're right. And that album cover won some design award.
It's very idyllic.
It's a takeoff of a Maxfield Parrish painting. So that was recorded in 88 and didn't come out until 89. And we recorded the first Girls in the Nose in 89.
From Girls in the Nose, tell me about Two Lovers.
Oh, Kay Turner has also been in very, very many bands. Kay is my buddy. She's 15 years older than I am, and she was in bands in New Jersey as well as in Austin. And she was in a band called Mothra, and the Oral Traditions were an a cappella group that had all of these choreographed dance numbers. And I saw them, the Oral Traditions, at a party do Two Lovers / Two Altars. With these really great dance moves. And so once we were in a band, I insisted that this be a song that we work up.
Well, I've got two lovers, I'm ashamed. I've got two lovers, I love them both the same. Let me tell you about my first lover. She's sweet and kind, she's mine, all mine. She treats me good, the way I love her should. She lets me love her. I really love her. Oh, 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 oh. I love her so.
Love her so.
And I'll do everything I can to let her know. But I've got to.
Tell me about Honorary Heterosexual Lesbian.
Oh, Honorary Heterosexual Lesbian was some chords I'd been working on, and actually Kay Turner and I had written a very mean song about my lover Teresa that made her cry, and then we had to just set that aside for a couple of years. And then I really missed the chord progression, and I said, come on, Kay, we got to do something with this. Let's try to make something that won't make anyone cry. And we came up with, an homage to all of the straight girls that we know, who love hanging out with lesbians, and they're heterosexual. It's a song for them. They didn't have a song yet.
There's a kind of sexuality
Tell me about the song Star Power.
Oh, Star Power is a Sonic Youth song. And Kay Turner introduced me to a lot of really great music, including Sonic Youth. And we love Sonic Youth so much. And so I'm not even entirely certain how we came to do that cover. But, you know, if it's going to have those... The words, "She knows how to make love to me, she knows how to make love," we're going to really relate to that. And actually, we would end our set with that for quite a while.
We've only just begun to live. White lace and promises, a kiss for luck and we're on our way.
Tell me about My Heart Crawls Off, which was a Meek Joy song.
Yes, My Heart Crawls Off. One of the things that happens when you're in a band is that you will resurrect songs from a previous band and see, throw it against the wall and see if it sticks and see if people like it. And because that was a vocal heavy song, Two Nice Girls came up with an arrangement that was really quite good. And it's very, very fun song to play. One of the things that's so particularly funny about that song, since we wrote it, Sarah and I wrote it as a joke with using as many cliches as possible, is when people tell me how much they relate to it and that they find it really moving.
Switching over to the first Two Nice Girls release, tell me about the song Goons.
Oh, Goons. You know, Goons is, I think, just your traditional lesbian love song. You love a girl, you love her so much, write a song about her.
Why the title?
Oh, because you're goony in love. Because you're just so goony in love.
My darling does what she likes. My love likes what she likes. Now she's playing on the beach. Now she's in the motel bed.
I have to ask about the Two Nice Girls recording of the Lou Reed song, Sweet Jane with Affection.
Well, there was going to be a Sweet Jane contest in Austin at Liberty Lunch where bands performed Sweet Jane and people, some voting body, voted on which was the best version. And I was away working at Michigan at the Women's Music Festival at the time, and Korn and Lori said, "We want to do this. It'll happen right when you return." And when they were working on Sweet Jane, Korn noticed that it was basically the same chords as Joan Armatrading's Love and Affection. So they interwove them. So we performed, and some other band won, although we won the popular vote. They won the official vote. And we actually were signed to Rough Trade on the strength of that song. Our manager at the time, Jim Ferrat, played it for Jeff Travis, and he fell in love. and he signed us on that song. And we tried recording it in the studio a couple of different times, and it never was as good as the version that people know, which was recorded live on KUT, a radio station in Austin. And the Rough Trade was counting on this being the single, the breakout single for Two Nice Girls. And then 2 months prior, Cowboy Junkie's version of Sweet Jane. Who knew that some Canadians were going to do an acoustic version that was going to catch on to the degree that it did? And we were scooped. We were absolutely scooped by the Cowboy Junkies.
Standing on the suitcase in my hand, deck is in his corset, Jane is in her vest. Me, I'm in a nice girl's bed, riding in a Stutz Beckett. And the ladies, they hold their eyes.
Tell me about the album, Like a Virgin.
After the first Two Nice Girls album came out, and it took a long time for it to come out because we recorded it at Willie Nelson's studio in Pinellas Falls. And when we were through with our basic tracks, the IRS locked it up for failure to pay taxes, which was the beginning of all of those tax woes, and we were right in the middle of that. And so all the time that we had, you know, blocked out, we couldn't use, and studios, you know, book months in advance. And so we were up a creek, you know, very much so. So we had to go in and out of all of these different studios, and eventually between Christmas and New Year's mixed on the Austin City Limits board. And so it came out a few months later than it was initially, you know, scheduled to be released. And Lori Freelove decided that she didn't really want to tour, and we knew we were going to be touring a great deal. So she quit the band after we played Kerrville that May of 89. And we put an ad in the Austin Chronicle, and Meg Hinches answered the ad. So we got her, and she did the tours, and everything was going really well. And we wanted to record another album quickly. But we didn't really have a whole new big body of work with Meg yet. But we had the covers that we had always done live, or just the things that we were you know, interested in doing, because I'm so interested in covers. Like a Virgin is definitely one of my favorite records I've ever done. I really loved it. We did it in the same studio that Girls in the Nose recorded our first album in, and we produced it ourselves, and I really, really, really love it.
Now, any of you who know the chronology of Gretchen Phillips and Two Nice Girls know that their breakout song was I Spent My Last $10 on Birth Control and Beer. But we're going to get to that a little later in the show. From the third Two Nice Girls album, tell me about Let's Go Bonding.
I wrote Let's Go Bonding initially in a rehearsal, a Girls in the Nose rehearsal. I came up with the chords there, and we did an early version, Girls in the Nose did, of Let's Go Bonding. But basically, Two Nice Girls just did, with that band, it crystallized faster. And that became also a kind of a set closer, or certainly a rockin' song we would do towards the end. I love disco. Disco, I love disco. Disco makes me feel so gay. Disco makes me so happy. I love dancing. I love wah-wah. I loved the girl I wrote that song about, crazy in love with her. And Let's Go Bonding is, once again, a song about being surprised that love is working out so well, which is pretty much a recurring theme, and that I'm really happy, and wanting to be able to, you know, spend some time. I was on the road all the time. I didn't really get to spend as much time with that girl as I would have liked. So, you know, let's have some time together. Let's go bonding.
Regarding your comment about disco, I can see that in the next year you recorded Rock Your Baby with the group Poi Dog Pondering.
Yes. Poi Dog Pondering was a very popular band at that point, and we kind of came up the ranks together in Austin, and the first time I saw Poi Dog Pondering, all they were doing was disco covers. Frank Orrell, who's the charismatic leader, was on drums. He wasn't even singing, and it was Abra Moore and Bruce Hughes singing one disco cover after another, and they were great. Because really, you know, I mean, if I had a disco band, I'd be in heaven. And so I loved them. And the night we had a big show with them at Liberty Lunch, and we did Rock Your Baby. We did I Want to Do Something Freaky to You. Do you know that one? I love that song. So we did disco songs with them, and they got asked to do that compilation, and so they asked us to join them.
One more, take me to your arms and rock you, baby. One more, take me to your arms.
And that was Gretchen Phillips and Kathy Korniloff providing backups for the group Poi Dog Pondering. And that can only be found on a compilation of cover songs called Are You Ready? 20 More Explosive Fantastic Rockin' Mega Smash Hit Explosions, released in 1992. Tell me about Princess of Power.
Princess of Power, I also wrote in a Girls in the Nose rehearsal, now that I think about it. Came up with those chords in a Girls in the Nose rehearsal. Just played a lot more electric guitar with that band. Same girl, same love, same new love. And I wanted to write a song that was kind of like My Heart Crawls Off in terms of really inane lyrics in order to sometimes if you're having a hard time with songwriting, there's this game that you can play where you write, if you have a little writer's block where you just write the stupidest stuff you can think of, you know, just go stupid. If you're going to be critical of it, like that's stupid or that's cliche, well then just go in that direction. And so that's kind of what I was doing with that song. Because this woman had so much power over me, and because this was like before Xena, She-Ra really was a kind of iconic, powerful force that really played a role in my life. I don't know how to explain it. We didn't have the human being Lucy Lawless yet. We just had the animated She-Ra, He-Man, everything. So that's just a song with the, you know, with the dumbest lyrics I could come up with.
I have a version by Five Star Music Makers.
Okay. Well, that's my own. Remember when I was telling you about Set Your Poems to Music, where you send in? Well, I sent in to a bunch of different companies the lyrics to Princess of Power. And Five Star Music Makers was the company who said that it showed potential. Well, they all said it showed potential if the company still existed, but they were the least expensive. So I went with them, with my plan being to send it to all of the companies and have all of them set it to music. But I had to stop with Five Star Music Makers because my rent money ran out. But I ended up with a cassette that was recorded just on one side, just in one channel on the left side. And it's a man playing. It sounds like a Fender Rhodes, but melodically, and I don't think he knew my version. I would be very surprised. Melodically, it's kind of eerily similar to the one I came up with. She-Ra, Princess of Power, you're my precious Princess of Power. She-Ra, oh, that's right, he didn't say She-Ra, he says She-Ra. She-Ra, Princess of Power. So it had this minor descending thing, very similar to mine.
She-Ra, Princess of Power, you're my precious Princess of Power. She-Ra, Princess of Power, I will save you from that burning sour. Princess of Power, you're my precious Princess of Power. She-Ra, Princess of Power, feel my mightiness if just for an hour. She-Ra.
Please tell me about the Queer Song.
Queer Song. Queer Song. I wrote the Queer Song a million years before Girls. No. Every band, all bands did it. Girls in the Nose did it. Meat Joy did it. Two Nice Girls just happened to be the ones who recorded it. But before Meat Joy, when I was just first playing with Suffragettes, I wrote that song about Teresa Taylor, about my young punk love. And so I wrote it in 82. And, you know, that was something that I was able to bring to Two Nice Girls that was, you know, along with Last $10 and My Heart Crawls Off, songs that already existed that were pretty good. So Queer Song is, you know, is about homophobia and about how it's hard and love will certainly get you past however bothersome homophobia may be. You can be afraid and, you know, it's okay because I'm so in love with you anyway.
Okay, we're still in 1992, and you did a duet with Kathy McCarty on Across the Great Divide, Songs of Joe Carroll Pierce.
Well, Kathy McCarty, my old friend Kathy McCarty, she's my buddy. And Joe Carroll Pierce, she was my buddy. And both of us wanted to do the same song. So we just did it together. It's a great Joe Carroll Pierce song. She's an amazing writer, really amazing writer. And it was such a pleasure to get to work with Kathy.
Blue North is coming, Jesus, I need the snow. Covers my shadows with silence and cold. Melt me into the waters that flow to the Gulf of Mexico. Blue North is coming, Jesus, please let me go. Jesus, please let me go and take this cup. Fill it with new snow. Give it to the wind. Break it on the stone. Break it on the stone.
That was a little bit of Blue Norther. time for a very common question. Why did Two Nice Girls break up?
Two Nice Girls broke up for a lot of reasons. It was hard for us that Rough Trade went bankrupt and that we weren't then signed right afterwards, which we really expected would occur. And emotionally, getting sort of, you know, label rejection to the extent that we did. I mean, there were some labels that were sort of interested, but I think it hurt our feelings, you know. We toured all the time as well. We did a tremendous amount of touring, and that was growing wearying. And there was tension in the band also, I think, partly because of my desire to do more weird stuff. The part of me that was still, you know, in love with the stuff that I'd done in Meat Joy. Weird is just the word, sonically weird, kind of bucked up against, you know, some members' perception of something that would, you know, be more palatable or be more successful. And so that was a sort of an artistic difference, but also people just kind of grew apart, and that was a very, very fun and very close band, a tremendous amount of fun and very intellectually stimulating. The conversations we had in the van were really, really, really good, and everybody was really, really smart, and we had a lot to discuss about lesbian culture. But we weren't getting along, which definitely can happen, and we worked on it a lot. We basically were a band that had been in, you know, couples counseling practically our entire incarnation. So hot-headedly, once on the road, it was like, you know, I'm so tired of this, I just want to quit. Okay, well, quit then. Why don't you just quit then? Well, I'm going to quit. Okay, well, I think you just should quit. Well, let's just all quit. Okay, well, then, yeah, man, I'm quitting. This is it. Okay, this is it. This is the last tour. This is it. This is it. And then I think rather, I feel it's kind of two ways. I mean, I wish that we could have worked it out a little better and been a little nicer and a little less hot-headed about it. But that's how we were, you know. We were very passionate at all times, so.
Did any good songs come out of all that angst?
No. It was just too painful. I mean, at that point in my life, I'd never been with anybody for 7 years, you know. I was 28 years old when that band broke up, you know. And I didn't move to San Francisco when I wanted to, because I wanted to be with my band and be with my girls, you know, and for us to do this thing. And it was very, very hard emotionally. And I was really mad at one of my band members, who I'm not mad at now, but it took a long time to get over it. So I didn't write any good songs out of it. It was just too painful, really.
Around that time, Meg Hentges started doing her own material, and on her first release, the 5-song cassette, you and Darcy Douglas guested on it.
Yeah. Darcy was in Girls in the Nose, and Meg and Darcy and I, right after Two Nice Girls, were in this group called Blobby, and that was totally improv, and we really would just get high and make songs up, and I have a bunch of cassettes that are so great of that. And that was another thing that was a little difficult with Two Nice Girls, was that we weren't particularly improvisational, and that kind of danger is important to me. And I felt like eventually we were playing it pretty safe. And
you really needed some creative risk.
I really needed some creative risk. I love that. Musically, subject matter wise, venue wise, something. Meg had those songs, a couple songs Two Nice Girls had done, Flick of a Wrist and Oh Heaven Sent is on a subsequent one. So we at a Blobby, we then started really working on Meg's songs, and then she got signed by an old friend from Portland. She had been in a band called the Neo Boys before she joined Two Nice Girls, and I had their record, so I was familiar with Meg's work already when she joined. And it was great working on that record with Meg. I really like it.
That cassette has the first version of This Kind of Love.
Yes, that cassette has the first version of This Kind of Love that her record guy, he heard that that first version on the radio in Austin at South by Southwest and signed her on the merit of that.
Do you remember the first part of that song?
In every high school in the Midwest, all the queers are at the bottom, just below the future farmers and above the poor and pregnant. I could see it, so I left it. I had 12 years to unload. I think that's the next part.
At the bottom, just above the poor and pregnant, just below the future farmers. I could feel it, so I left it. I had 12 years to unload. I'm looking both ways. I'm crossing over the road.
This kind of love is good for you. This kind of love.
Crossing over the road.
This kind of love is good for you. This kind of love.
I just love that song. That was This Kind of Love by Meg Henches. She recorded it twice. The first time was with the help of Gretchen and Darcy on her 1992 cassette called Tattoo Urge. And the later version you just heard was from the 1999 CD Brompton's Cocktail. That song won the Glemma Award for Out Song of the Year, and the album won Rock Album of the Year. After the breakup of Two Nice Girls, your first solo work was Welcome to My World.
I worked on Welcome to My World, which is very Casio-based stuff, one summer, the summer of 93, when I was living in New York and also in New Jersey. Very kind of classic. You've got your four-track. You're in somebody's New Jersey basement, you know, running through their effects, getting high and making stuff up. And I had, and there's stuff, some of the in-between song talking and interstitials, I wanted to put on Chloe Liked Olivia, that ended up on Welcome to My World, and that was a source of friction, was that other people, including the producer, were appalled at the notion, whereas it made some of us laugh our heads off. So that was, Welcome to My World was a cassette that I handed around to my friends really just as a sort of like, I'm trying to learn how to work with my four track, and this is this funny thing I've done. And people kept urging me, including some radio people, to release it. So then I put it on cassette and hand decorated every cassette cover.
They're all different?
They're all different. Probably not 1,500, probably less than 1,500, but at least 1,000. Some I manufactured eventually, because this was a big seller. And one year, Welcome to My World won the best number two best cassette in the Austin Chronicle music poll, and the same year Meg Hinch's won number two best, I don't know, album or something. I was really pleased with our work.
Describe it musically.
Welcome to My World is a bedroom recording, like the bedroom recordings that I made when I was a teenager living in the Heights with my recorder, where I would record something in the left track and then go back over it and record it onto the right, where I could do that separation. It's just silly craziness, with the theme really being about sin and excess, something that I was very interested in at the time. The costs, what are the wages of sin? What does it cost you? And also I was, you know, very interested in how these are portrayed in an exploitative manner by porn magazines. I'm reading from porn books from there. I'm also taking little bits from exploitation movies where I just held the microphone up to the television and recorded it off of there. And I'm just setting it to music. It's about, you know, it's about sexual deviance. And the most heartfelt song on Welcome to My World is the penetration solution, where I outline my theory of the world being divided into sticks and holes. And sticks are what you want to be, and a hole is definitely a lot worse than a stick. And a hole is the degraded one. And I don't think that's true. And we were actually in Two Nice Girls. We were going to do a concept album called The Female Penetrator. We were really into this whole, you know, and I still continue to be into this belief that the world is divided into sticks and holes. And I just, that's a theme I work and rework over and over again.
Hi, I'm Gretchen Phillips. Welcome to my world. I quit the band Two Nice Girls in order to devote more time to playing around with my four-track, laying down innocuous pop melodies, putting spoken text of propaganda over the top of it. I hope you enjoy the fruits of my labor half as much as I enjoyed getting stoned and laying this stuff down for you. And I also hope that some of my propaganda does seep into your system and alter your life irrevocably. Thanks for listening.
How about How Lesbians Get That Way?
Oh, How Lesbians Get That Way is text from a book about female perversion. I'm reading from that, and then I'm kind of acting it out with my own surprise ending that was not actually found in the book. They stay that way because it feels so good.
The reason that most women become lesbians is not from any urgent, enduring desire to feel the embraces of female flesh. Rather, it is by default. These women were unable or too afraid to compete openly and successfully for men.
Wanda, when I was off to college, I met another woman.
A homosexual episode in which some crisis instigates an affair is more common in the loves of normal women than many people realize. Traumatic love affairs with men can fray the edges of a woman's basic heterosexuality.
Oh, I was so looking forward to it.
An example of tight lesbian relations is given by Wanda M's case history. While she was still in college, Wanda's fiancé of 2 years wrote her from the Eastern school he was attending that he was marrying another woman. For a week, Wanda was too miserable to attend classes.
God, I don't even feel like going to class.
Another song on the Gretchen Phillips Experience album was Peace Park, and it appeared again in 1995 on the Various Artists compilation Out Loud as a live version. Tell me about that song.
Let's see, well, after Two Nice Girls, I really returned to one of my first loves, which is the Casio presets. I love and have always written songs on either the little demo song that comes with a Casio or Yamaha brand, but primarily Casio, and all of the other rhythm patches that you hit that are called country and western or disco or rock 4/4 or waltz or whatever. And so the band that I had, my first version of the Gretchen Phillips Experience, because that's what I would always say in Two Nice Girls, the hell with you, someday I'm going to quit this band and form the Gretchen Phillips Experience. And so then I had to basically use that name after threatening to do it for so many years. And that was me on guitar and Andy Loomis on Casio. And Peace Park... Why did I write Peace Park? There's a book called Lesbian Psychologies where she has a chapter where this, it's actually an anthology, but someone has a chapter that we discussed a great deal in Two Nice Girls about why lesbians tend to be serial monogamists and why is it that gay men can have affairs and can trick around and fuck around and it doesn't necessarily bust up a primary relationship that they could be inside. And she basically says that she thinks it would be a good idea if lesbians were to be more like gay men. So Peace Park is my song in response to that challenge or a question. It's really a series of questions posed to a gay man and ending with, and do you think it's something that I should do too?
I have a little ditty now about a special park in Austin. It's called Peace Park, and it's fantastic. It serves many functions. And here we go.
Have Did you do it on a dare? Did you do it on a lark? Was anonymity part of the deal? Did it feel more good? Did it feel mighty real?
In 1995, the act became the Gretchen Phillips Experience, with a recording entitled Do You Ever Wish for More? From that one, tell me about Gretchen Phillips Says Yes.
Well, remember when I was telling you about the Set Your Poems to Music, which I love so much? On most of the compilations that have come out, or a lot of them, there is one song called Jimmy Carter Says Yes. That is a really nice disco song. And once when Joan of Arkansas went on a retreat to Arkansas, we were listening to Set Your Poems to Music, and someone in the band and other people seconded it. Gretchen, you should run for president, and this should be your song, because you really have so many opinions, and you think that you know how everything should be. You should be president, and it should be. We should do this song. We're going to do this song. Gretchen Phillips Says Yes. Eventually, I brought that into the new Gretchen Phillips Experience, is the name of that incarnation, with Joe, the singer from Joan of Arkansas, and from Meat Purveyors on second guitar, and Thor on drums, and Andy Loomis on bass and keyboards.
KPFT is in pledge drive this week, so I had to trim this edition of Queer Music Heritage down a bit to allow more time for the ever-important pitching. So if you enjoy this kind of programming, please consider calling in with a pledge. But my internet listeners can hear the complete original show, plus several additional minutes of the interview, as I do not have the same time constraints when I upload the shows to my website. And this is a good time to invite you to check out my site at www.queermusicheritage.com. If you visit it while you're listening, you can see the playlist and follow along while looking at photos of the artists and recordings. I've always considered our music history as a visual as well as an audio experience. Also, for more very queer programming, please listen to After Hours with Jimmy Carper, now in its new time slot every Friday night, Saturday morning from 1 to 4 a.m. on KPFT. It's Queer Radio with Attitude.